Yo, 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 what's good? What's good, everybody? Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of the Isaiah K Podcast. We are up early, effective. Hope you guys are doing well. Hope your day is getting off to a really good start. Mine is. We got a lot to get into, obviously. This is a big episode, huge. I know people want to hear, some of you guys want to hear my thoughts about the outcome of these of the NFC and AFC championship games. Obviously, we have our Super Bowl set in stone. It's going to be 49ers Chiefs in Las Vegas, obviously. I can't wait. I cannot wait for the Super Bowl. We got 2 weeks for that. So these next few pods going to be really interesting. We're going to be, just nipping and dugging, trying to find topics to cover, stories to cover and talk about as we prep for the Super Bowl and so forth. That should be really, really fun as it gets closer. But obviously, you guys know how we start the pod first and foremost. I'm your humble and highly favorite host, Isaiah Kibb, the Isaiah Kibb Podcast. Shouts out to everyone that is listening. Shouts out to all the support that you guys give me. Shouts out to all the people that make comments. Shouts out to everybody that's listened, that's a first-time listener, a regular listener. Continue to share, stream the pod on any DSP that you guys may use. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. I don't care if you use Spotify, Apple, it doesn't matter. Regardless, use them all. Shouts out to everyone. Let's just get to like the nuts and bolts of this whole episode, right? And I think starting with the Ravens and Chiefs AFC Championship, I think it's appropriate. I think that's the appropriate place to start. Let's start right there. Obviously, the Chiefs remain victorious. They go on to their fourth Super Bowl appearance in 5 years. Absolutely phenomenal. They're on a really, really historic pace, a great pace. They have a chance to win back to back Super Bowls. And obviously that'll be the first time that has happened in 20 years. I want to say with the Patriots. So they're trying to put themselves in rarefied air. And it's so hard in today's game, today's sport, I feel like, to win back-to-back championships, especially with the NFL. It's filled with just so much parity. The quarterback play is really good. Like, overall, it's just hard to repeat as champions, especially now. But let's start with, we're going to have 2 weeks of prepping for the Super Bowl to talk about Kansas City and to give them their flowers respectfully. And I will talk about Kansas City a little bit in the episode. But I feel like the bigger story in terms of the outcome of the AFC Championship game is undoubtedly the Ravens. And in sports, I don't find myself being shocked or surprised at a lot of results, because as you continue to watch the sport, myself, as I've gotten older, and I've been watching sports for a long time, but obviously as you get older, you start to understand, you pick up different understandings and so forth, and you just see so many outcomes. You see, underdogs win, and you see dynasties form and take place and take shape, right? I would say I'm not shocked that the Ravens lost. No, I thought Kansas City could very well go into Baltimore and beat the Ravens. I'm not shocked at the result. I'm more so shocked at how the Ravens lost, per se. And I will start with this. The offensive output and game plan was an absolute disaster. An absolute gut-wrenching mistake and disaster. And for me, I feel for Raven fans, because all year long, essentially in every game that the Ravens have played in, they have been the most physical team in football. Even when they've played the teams like the 49ers, they're more physical. They're the most physical team in football. That's what they have been. That's what they've leaned into. I've kind of praised the Ravens because I thought they had a mixture of throwback football because of how physical they are, but also elements and sprinkled in elements of modern football with some of the advancement of the offenses, right? But they have been heavy power running football team. They punch you in the mouth. That's been their identity this entire year. And in the biggest spot, in the biggest moment, in the biggest game, the Ravens bailed on their run game. And to be more specific, Gus Edwards, I mean, he's had a phenomenal season overall, filling in for J.K. Dobbins. But he's, for the second half of the season, he's been really, really productive. And he make things go. And they just bailed the run game. I'm not completely sure why. Like I said, but I thought it was a total disservice from John Harbaugh. And you guys know, I like Jim and John Harbaugh. But John Harbaugh, and obviously he doesn't call offensive plays. He's not an offensive guy. But he approved of that game plan. And that right there was not what made the Ravens the number one seed. That was not the Ravens team that most people saw as the favorites and as the quote-unquote best remaining team left in the play. Like, no, that was not it. And on the flip side, when you look at the Kansas City Chiefs, they leaned into, I think, all year – especially with their offensive issues. I think early on or parts throughout the year, Kansas City, they were fighting to come to grips that they weren't a team that's going to just score 30 plus points on any given game. That's not them. But it seems like week after week, this Kansas City offense has gotten better. And it's found its identity, and they have completely leaned into what they are. They have leaned into what they do well. And with Kansas City, you know, their game plan was very, very apparent. They're gonna Travis Kelce you to death. They're going to run the football with Isaiah Pacheco. And I think it's funny how he runs, but he runs hard and he's scrappy. He's a throwback for me. He's a throwback, but they're going to run it with Isaiah Pacheco. And occasionally Rashee Rice is going to come up with some pretty big catches. That was their formula. That was their offensive game plan. And that's their reliable guys. With Baltimore, I mean, granted, the passing game has made its strides this year, but what separated Baltimore was obviously their great defensive play, but then their physical style of offense. And like I said, it has, you know, mixtures, and it has this, you know, modern day offensive, you know, offensive schemes kind of sprinkled in there. But what made them was the physicality. And I think from the first possession, the first two possessions, it was very clear early on that Kansas City was the more physical team. Now, granted, I thought this game plan was really foolish. And like I said, with the Ravens, you're a power running football team. You average 150 yards on the ground per game. There's absolutely no reason why you should only have six rushes in the biggest spot of the year. And granted, you were trailing, but you weren't trailing by 20 points. You were trailing by a score. You were trailing no more than 10 points throughout the game. And for the majority of the second half, for at least that second, more than half of the second half, you were down by a touchdown. Why bail on the run game? I made a note to myself in the third quarter, like, man, the Ravens are awfully throwing the football a lot. They're throwing the football like they're in a shootout. They're throwing the football like they have to get back in the game. The game was there. The Ravens had plenty of opportunities to win the football game. And to me, it felt like one team, it was getting severely, massively outcoached and just outgained. And then on the other side, it feels like the Chiefs, they leaned into what they do well. They do what champions kind of do. Champion, you know, score early, you know, get the crowd, score first, get the crowd out of the game a little bit, slow down some of that momentum, have, you know, put together a long, you know, a long kind of drive, play the time possession game. That is what Kansas City did. And they're, like I said, their game plan was clear. Granted, they got Mahomes. They got the best. They got the, think about this. The team with the best quarterback ever, with the best tight end ever, with arguably the best play caller ever, said, hey, we're not going to throw the ball. We are going to run the football. We're going to be physical and control time possession. The team with the power running game, the physical team, said, no, we're going to spread it out and throw the football. It was just mind-boggling and head-scratching to me. But then I kind of, Lamar Jackson, this is his reputation. This is who he is. And I think it's fair to say, or in sports, this is how we judge, right? We judge people by if they win or lose. Is it a fair way to think about things? I don't know. Me personally, sometimes I have to intervene in some of these conversations and say, hey, can we add more substance? Can we have some context? Can we talk about circumstance, right? And certain things are circumstantial. In certain conversations, yes, we do need that type of context. But at the end of the day, when we're having a conversation about whether it's all-time great NBA players, all-time great NFL quarterbacks, or just quarterbacks in general, we chalk it up to wins and losses. And ultimately, Lamar Jackson's team lost. And he did not play well. He didn't play so well, right? He did not play well. Now, certain things were his fault. Certain things he did, he could have controlled, or lack thereof. He didn't do, he could have control, right? That's his fault. Now, there are certain things that was just out of his control. Zay Flowers fumbling in the end zone as he's about to score the touchdown. Lamar Jackson could do nothing. He could absolutely do nothing about that. That's not his fault, right? That's just not his fault. But I tell you what is his fault. In the second half, the Ravens defense held Kansas City to 0 points. In the second half, oh yeah, by the way, three of their six possessions, Kansas City, three of those possessions led to three and outs. They were just three and outs. And what did Lamar and the offense do? With six opportunities in the second half? 3 points. 3 points. With six possessions in the second half, Lamar and the offense put up 3 points. That is something he can control. OBJ just completely disappeared, right? Right? Like, some of that can be like, hey, got to get him more targets. That's not necessarily Lamar's fault. But OBJ disappeared. But once again, that pick by Lamar Jackson first, he's been playing in this league for too long to make a decision like that. That was a bad decision. That was a bad throw. That was a bad decision. Cool. It got picked off. Terrible option. Terrible decision making. But even if you're going to make that type of throw, looking back on it, the placement of that throw was not where that ball should have been thrown. That ball should have been thrown high up near the goalpost for Isaiah Likely to actually make a play on that. right? For him to actually be able to make some type of play on that. The way Lamar Jackson threw that football likely had no chance of coming back to the ball and try to make an attempt to catch that football. So that's first things first, right? But Lamar Jackson, he threw that pick, right? So fair or not, this is Lamar Jackson's reputation. High-end, premium player. He's going to win his now second MVP. That puts him in rarefied air because I listed the players that have two MVPs. Most of those dudes are wearing gold jackets or soon will be, right? So that puts him in rarefied air. But at the quarterback spot especially, it comes with a lot of responsibility. And the high end of it is, hey, when a team is winning and you're making good money, the quarterback gets a lot of the praise. When the team loses, no matter if the defense gave up points or, you know, coaching blunders or drop passes by, when the team loses, you know who gets the weight of the blame? The quarterback. That's how it goes. That's how it works. That's the way it works. Fair or not fair, some things are circumstantial. Some things are completely out of their control. But when they're winning, it's the quarterback. When they're winning, the quarterback gets the love and the praise. Get all the parades, whatever. When lose, the quarterback gets the weight of the blame. For instance, okay, I'm gonna give you guys an example. And you just tell me what comes to mind or give me your answer. Obviously, you can just say your answer. I will give you guys my answer, though. I'm going to ask a question. When you think about Alex Smith as a quarterback in the playoffs, what comes to mind? Well, I know what comes to mind to me, for me, game manager, quarterback, kind of a game manager, and couldn't win big playoff games. That is what comes to mind when I think about Alex Smith. Game manager and couldn't win big playoff games. Now think about it. January 2012, 49ers playing the Giants, Candlestick Park, NFC Championship game. Now, we all know the Giants went on to win that game, and then they went on to win the Super Bowl and beat the Patriots. They were massive underdogs. They beat the Patriots, right? That's history as we know it. And Alex Smith, that is a loss. That's a playoff loss on his resume. Can't win the big game. The following year, Alex Smith is playing really well in 2013. Playing really well. Gets a concussion. Colin Kaepernick steps in. Takes him to the Super Bowl. The rest is history. Now, Alex Smith, when he got cleared and he was healthy and he had a chance to get back into the starting lineup and like inserted back as the starting quarterback, he didn't. You know why? Because the narrative, like, you can't win big playoff games with him, right? But think back. In that 2012 NFC Championship game, Alex Smith actually played a really good game. He was playing really well. I would argue he was playing so well, he outplayed Eli Manning in that game. But you know what happens? You know the real reason why the Niners lost that game? That people 12 years later don't talk about? I don't know if there's anybody in 49er land that's out there talking about that NFC Championship game. But you know what don't get talked about? The punt returner. The punt returner had two crucial fumbles. And the last fumble led to the Giants ultimately winning the game. But the punt returner had two fumbles. But Alex Smith, you watch that. If you go back and watch that game, he outplayed Eli Manning. He played really well. And if it wasn't for the punt returner, those two fumbles, Alex Smith would have been playing in the Super Bowl. And who knows? If he wins it, best case scenario, he wins the Super Bowl. And granted, he's not going to go down as this all-time great quarterback, right? But number one pick, right? Niners weren't good. They get Harbaugh, get to the Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, right? History kind of changes a little bit, right? Right? if he doesn't win the Super Bowl, let's say they just get there and he doesn't win it. Cool. He can say I got to the Super Bowl, right? But the result of that was, hey, his punt returner fumbled twice. It ultimately cost the Niners that game. And now Alex Smith, 12 years later, what comes to mind when you think about Alex Smith? He can't win big playoff games. He's a game manager. But he's the same guy that outplayed Eli Manning in that NFC Championship game, and they should have won that game. But that doesn't get talked about. It's about wins and losses. We're result-oriented, especially in sports. We are result-oriented. Eli Manning, like I said, Eli Manning, he's going to probably be in the Hall of Fame one day because of those two Super Bowl runs. But one of those, but in that NFC Championship game, no one is going to go back and say, man, Alex Smith outplayed Eli Manning actually in that game. And Alex Smith should have, the 49ers and Alex Smith should have won that game. No one says that. No one goes back and say that. What they say is Eli Manning led two of the best playoff runs of all time. And that's a huge reason why he's going to be in the Hall of Fame. That is what people say. And when you think about Alex Smith, if you ask a person, what do you think about Alex Smith? What's the first thing that comes to mind? What's the first couple things that come to mind? Game manager and couldn't win big time playoff games. And with Lamar Jackson, that is the reputation. That is the reputation. No one 15 years from now, when we're talking about Lamar Jackson and playoff, like no one is going to remember that Zay Flowers fumbled the ball, right? No one's going to remember that Roquan Smith got a personal foul. No one is going to remember that. All we're going to see is that Ravens, to this point, up until this day, currently, I thought this was the best chance for either Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen to beat Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback ever. This was their best opportunity. Lamar had home field. He got a new play caller. Got some nice pieces on offense. He got the best defense in the league. Kansas City finally has to come on the road and win a road playoff game in your house. Right? This is the best opportunity. So like I said, 10 years from now, no one is going to talk about that. No one is going to say, oh, Zay Flowers fumbled the ball. And no. Or John Harbaugh had a coaching blunder. No, we're not going to say that. We're going to remember that Lamar Jackson didn't play so well, and it was a playoff loss, and it's going to go against him. And up until this point, the critics and Lamar Jackson are going to make a ton of money. His contract kicks in, his new contract that he just signed, it kicks in next year, and he's going to make a lot of money for years moving forward. But up until this point, until proven otherwise, he is not. He has shown that he does not have the ability to win, to be good enough in the pocket to win these big time playoff games. Fair or not fair. And like I said, this was their best opportunity. Kansas City seemed vulnerable. Kansas City's not, they're not overly explosive on offense, right? In Kansas City, they knew they weren't going to beat Baltimore by with a score of 34-30. They knew they probably weren't going to put up 30-plus points on this defense. You're not going to do it. It's not how they were going to win this game. And they knew that. They knew they weren't going to win this game 34-30. If anybody was going to score 30 points, it was going to be Baltimore. So, fair or not fair, no matter how we judge it, this is just how we judge it. And it doesn't matter. It can be Peyton Manning, Dan Marino, Aaron Rodgers, quarterbacks. It does not matter. When it comes to the quarterback spot and position, it's heavily judged in terms of playoff games. It's just how it goes. Playoff success, playoff results, however you want to chalk it up. That is how we do it. That is how it is judged, right? No one cares, right? If you kick, no one cares. No one cares. That's how it's judged. That's how it's judged, and that's how we rate it. That's how it, by the results. By the results. Like I said, I do sometimes try to intervene and add context, but this is how you're judged. You're judged heavily on win-loss result. And the fact is, Lamar Jackson, okay, he has two playoff wins. He has two playoff wins. And in the years, the times he's been in the playoffs, more times than not, he's probably had the better coach. He's probably had the better defense, right? And in this instance, he had home field advantage, extra rest, extra preparation. This seemed like the Ravens' best chance up to this point. Kansas City found a way. Lamar Jackson got to get over that hump. As great as Peyton Manning was, he had to get over that hump. Right? Had to get over that hump. Peyton Manning is a 500 playoff quarterback. That's what he is. Right? And he made some deep playoff runs in the back end of his career and Denver as well. He got to a Super Bowl, but that's what it is. And with Lamar Jackson, you got to get over that hump. And he got to take some blame. Like Harbaugh, if you want to fight me tooth and nail that Harbaugh, that was an egregious game plan. I second that. I agree. I totally agree. The game plan was awful. If you want to say, hey, Zay Flowers fumbled in the ball, like rookie mistake, I agree. Also watched Lamar Jackson and his offense in the second half only put up 3 points with 6 opportunities. Also watched Lamar Jackson throw a boneheaded interception. Also watched Lamar Jackson not play his best game in the biggest game up until that point this year. Also saw that too. You know. Okay. And on to the 49ers game we go. This was a pretty exciting one to watch as well. 49ers with another playoff comeback win. This is kind of weird seeing them come back and or happening to come back from these deficits and win. But as I told you guys, as I was watching this game, I was speaking earlier, you know, been watching sports, understanding sports now. As I get older, I understand sports in certain moments and so forth. And rarely am I shocked, or I tend not to be shocked as often, right? Because I'm starting to see pretty much everything. But I was really thinking, throughout this 49ers game, because the Lions, as we get to, they had really firm control of this game, that I was like, the Lions making a Super Bowl. Like, that's Madden type stuff. Like, this stuff you don't see. The Lions don't make it to the Super Bowl. And I was just trying to picture, like, wow, the Lions actually might be representing the NFC as a Super Bowl team. Like, that is realistically on the table. Like, obviously, that's realistically on the table when they're playing for the NFC champion. Like, I get it. But when they were up by 2 scores, and we're like halfway through the third quarter, I'm like, oh, wow, this is real. This is the Lions playing in the Super Bowl. It's like very, not just on the table as a possibility, but very much on the table. And it looked like it was going to happen. And obviously, Dan Campbell is getting barbecued for his gamble that he took. And part of me, throughout the year, throughout the season, I have acknowledged and I have praised Dan Campbell for being a risk taker, but not just being a risk taker and him being aggressive, but this is kind of the makeup of the team. And he has built some type of culture, and culture is important. He has built a culture for this Lions team. This Lions team, they just all throughout the year, they look different. It just seems like they have a different mojo and a different swagger about themselves. But in moments, in situations, there is a difference between being a risk taker, a maverick, and aggressive, and then there's just outright foolishness and just like, why? They're just outright foolishness. And that decision to go for it up 24-10 was just outright foolish. And I know you guys are going to probably say, well, Isaiah, you literally just said, hey, you praised him for being a risk taker and you know, sticking to his guns and sticking on his standing on business. Dan Campbell stood on business. But this call was absolutely atrocious. It made no sense. And like I said, there's a line between aggressiveness and being risky. And then the other side of that, you flip the coin, it's called foolishness. And it bit Dan Campbell in the ass with this one. And let me just explain. And I already know there's gonna be a group of people out there that says, hey, you gotta stick with what got you there, right? You gotta do what got you there. And him going for it, going for it on risky fourth downs and risky propositions, that's what got the Lions there, right? And I say no to that. No, you do not have to stick to what got you there. For instance, every morning when I wake up, you know what the first thing I do? You know what the first thing I do? I brush my teeth. Every morning when I wake up, I brush my teeth. I don't want to talk to nobody. Maybe I might grab my phone first. But the first thing I do, go in the bathroom and I brush my teeth. Now, for instance, let's just say I'm not a morning breath, right? But for instance, let's say I woke up in the morning and my house was on fire. The first thing I'm doing is not brushing my teeth. I'm getting the hell out the house. So I say that to say circumstances dictate that I do things differently. Circumstances, depending on situations, circumstances may dictate for you to do things differently. So for instance, if the house is burning down, the first thing I'm doing is not reaching for my toothbrush and my toothpaste and brushing my teeth. I'm getting the hell out of there. And with Dan Campbell, there is, and that's just a real life example, right? But in sports, we see it all the time. In baseball, like, granted, you may do something that got you there. Like, for instance, the Rockets, several years ago in the Western Conference Finals, I think it was a 2018 Western Conference Finals, Game 7 on their home floor. Now, obviously, those Rockets teams under D'Antoni with James Harden and Chris Paul, what were they known for? They were known for scoring a lot of points and shooting a lot of threes. And that was their formula. That's how they got home court. That's how they were able to take the Warriors and push the Warriors to 7 games because they could score the basketball and they could shoot threes and put them up like no other, right? That was the Rockets' formula. But Game 7 comes, they miss 27 straight threes. 27 straight threes, and they had the nerve to just keep shooting them. After 5 consecutive missed threes, I would have stopped. I don't care if that's how we got there. We gotta change. If the 3-point shot not working, we gotta change it. They missed 27 consecutive 3-point field goals. 27. 27 consecutive three-point field goals they missed. Should they have done something differently? You answer that question. If the Rockets have done so, if they would have done something a little bit differently, maybe the outcome of that game changes. And that's my exact point with Dan Campbell. Granted, yes, we praise him for his risk taking, just like we praise the Rockets because of their offensive prowess and their ability to make the three-point shot, right? Same way we praise them. We praise Dan Campbell for building a culture, and he stands on it, and he believes it, and he has run into the ground. And that's the exact problem. He ran into the ground, and it bit him in the tail. So, yes, the Lions should have absolutely taken the points in that spot. You're up 24-10, and I'm not saying this is what lost the Lions the game, because I think the Lions had several miscues, you know, big-time drops. They had some fumbles. Like, I think there was several miscues, but this type of call changes the momentum, and it swings the momentum of games. And that's exactly what happened here with Dan Campbell. You had a chance to go up 27-10. You effectively make it a three-point game. The Niners ultimately were already out of sorts. Things weren't going well for them. Like, things were not going well for them. So then you think of the momentum swing. I know people say momentum doesn't matter, and it's not a stat, and you can't really track momentum. Bullshit. It changed the complexion of the game. Like I said, with momentum shifts, it can't really be measured. But if you're watching the game, if you're an educated enough fan and you're watching the game, and that game in particular on Sunday with the Lions and Niners, where Ben Johnson is just having a field day. He's having a field day with the Niners defense. He's cooking up and dialing up every play, and every play is just working. Like, just 5 yards a pop, eight yards, 10 yards, first down, you know, like second and manageable, first down. Like, they're just clicking. And then this type of call is made. This absolutely gives the Niners more new life. It gives them a defensive stop because at that point, they didn't have many up until that point. They finally get one. Their offense starts to hum, and it just changed the whole entire complexion of that game. And if it was week 9 and the Bears are playing, I don't know, the Lions are playing the Bears, and it's week 9 and you're at home and you want to stick it to a division opponent, and you want to just go for it, and you're up 24-10, sure, go ahead. But this was too big of a spot. Forget all of the historical context behind it, where, you know, this is the first time opportunity for the Lions to get to the Super Bowl. This would be their first time ever at the Super Bowl. Like, forget that. You're in a big spot versus a really good team, and you're dominating them. You're dominating them, and anything that you're doing on offense at this point has just been essentially working. Take the 3 points, put your defense back on the field, keep momentum in your favor, and close out the game and force San Francisco to make a big-time comeback. Force them to do that. So I think that definitely changed. Like, that Dan Campbell call definitely changed the momentum of the game. Brock Purdy, in this first half, I thought he was, once again, kind of similar to the Green Bay game, really sloppy. In the second half, he played cleaner football. He started to run and use his mobility a little bit. And I think some people kind of downplay Brock's like athleticism. Granted, I'm not saying he's like Lamar Jackson or Josh Allen or anybody, but he's pretty fast. Like, in terms of mobility, and, you know, he's pretty fast. And honestly, with him using his legs, it softened up Detroit's defense, because it just felt like Detroit was just smothering San Fran. And it just it softened up the defense. And Brock, that's one of his best traits. He's very instinctual. Like, he's very, a lot of what makes Brock Purdy successful at this level, or the reason why he's found so much effectiveness, is because of his instinctual movements, him being able to feel pressure and so forth, because he has to make up for it with the lack of arm talent or the lack of, you know, physical capabilities that certain guys around the league just have. He doesn't possess those same abilities. So he uses his instincts. Very, very, I would say Brock is very instinctual, and that's one of the best aspects of his game. Pretty underrated. Like I said, his pocket movement, pretty underrated. Got good lateral movement. Purdy takes a lot of chances down the field, and that was kind of his red flag coming out of Iowa State. But he takes a lot. He makes a lot of big throws and takes a lot of big opportunities for a guy that doesn't have like a Hollister. Like, he doesn't have a big arm. He's not working with a cannon. So the mere fact that he takes a lot of chances down the field shows you, okay, he's trying to make a play, but it sometimes kind of puts the ball in harm's way. And, you know, like I said, the 49ers, they weren't clicking necessarily really on offense or defense. The flow of the game just was not going in their direction. And ultimately, I think Dan Campbell and his risk, his foolish risk, I would say, it kind of changed the trajectory of that game. It changed the complexion of that game. Totally. I felt like the Niners fought their defense after they got a stop, kind of show, okay, probably wipe their forehead and like, okay, we can stop these guys. We do have a chance to actually get more stops. We can actually stop them, because up until that point, it didn't seem as if the Niners could just stop the Lions at all. It didn't seem that way. I thought the Niners defense, they played better in the second half. I feel like they played with better pace. In the first half, they looked really slow. The Lions kind of had their way. The Lions have a tendency to do that with their offensive line, their skill guys, whatever. But they played with a better pace, and the Niners ultimately was in better position to win this, to make plays on defense, and they were the better team. But for about three quarters, the Lions looked like the better team, and they were executing just at a more efficient clip. But that call from Dan Campbell was huge. And I think, let's put it all in perspective. Like I said for my previous segment, we have plenty of time to talk about Niners Chiefs. We got plenty of time. So I want to spend this episode mostly on Ravens and Lions, because after this, for the next 2 weeks, we'll be talking about the 49ers and we'll be talking about the greatness of the Chiefs, right? With the Lions, I think Dan Campbell has done an awesome job, right? Like, it'd be foolish to just, you know, granted, I thought his decision-making cost the Lions potentially a Super Bowl trip. But ultimately, grand step back, big picture-wise, he had a really good year. I think what doesn't get talked about enough, and I hinted at this last week, I think it was either, no, it was after the Lions-Rams win. After the Lions beat the Rams in the wild card, I said Brett Holmes doesn't get talked about enough in terms of, you know, being one of the best GMs in the league and, you know, running a pretty good front office. But Brett Holmes, I think the story here with the Lions is the job that he's done. Dan Campbell, like I said, I like him as a coach. He's not me personally. He's not like an offensive guru or a defensive guru. He's more of a, you know, he's a CEO coach, right? He's a CEO coach. Ben Johnson, you know, great coordinator, fine. So you got to give him credit for that. But ultimately, he's a CEO coach. So he's not overlooking the offense. He's not overlooking the defense. He's just giving the thumbs up, thumbs down to certain game plans and decisions that's made. That's all, right? The offense isn't his baby. So I think the real story here with Detroit and their resurgence or their emergence, I should say, is Brad Holmes. Brad Holmes and the job that he's done with drafting and acquiring and making this roster competitive and really, really good. And they got some nice, high-end, young players to build around. They really do. I think Goff, he played pretty well for the most part. You know, Goff has his moments where he can look really, really good. And then he has his moment where he's like, this is why Sean McVay moved on, right? You can kind of see that. So with Goff, that's Goff. But overall, I think the star here in Detroit, it has to be Brad Holmes. Doing what he did in the draft this past year with drafting Gibbs, drafting Sam Laporta. Obviously, Penny Sewell was a pretty good pick. Aiden Hutchinson was a really good pick. Jameson Williams still coming into his own. I think that's going to turn out and be a pretty good pick. You're going to look back 2 years from, I think 2 years from now. I don't know how this Lions thing is going to trend, but I think you're going to look back and you're going to be like, wow, they drafted a lot of quality players in a three, four year span. And Brad Holmes, I think, is the brains behind that. So congratulations to the 49ers for winning the NFC. Pretty much as I thought they would. But I'm going to end the pod off right here. Obviously, I will check back in with you guys later this week. Obviously, we'll continue to talk more about the Chiefs and the 49ers getting ready for their matchup with the Super Bowl. Like I said, we have 2 weeks, so no rush. But I wanted to spend some time on my reaction and giving my thoughts about the NFC, AFC championship games. Always remember, two choice, one decision. I hope you guys enjoyed. Keep down on the pod, keep streaming the pod, sharing the pod. Greatly appreciate it. And I'm out. Peace, deuces.